This podcast was recorded on the lands of the Boon Wurrung people of the Kulin Nation, the land on which we're lucky enough to raise our sons and daughters. Always was and always will be Aboriginal land.
Hello and welcome to Witching Hour, a show by Ready or Not that looks at what's exciting, delighting, intriguing and frustrating us as two mums trying to make work work. I'm Lou.
I'm Loz, and here's a good news story. Well, no, I digress, actually. It is not a good news story. It is, well, it's a bit of both. It's an interesting fact, and then it's something that I've personally liked. Did you know that women are 34 times more likely to queue for the toilet?
I was shocked, and then I wasn't. I was imagining myself at like the MCG or something. And there's never a line for the men's and there's always a huge line.
Exactly.
For the women.
Exactly. So it says women and girls go to the toilet 1.3 times more often than males and for 1.6 times as long, which that surprised me because some men go to the, it takes an age, let's just say.
They're either really long or they're really quick, really, I reckon, whereas we're a bit more in between.
You're right. But buildings usually have more toilets for men because urinals are smaller. And off the back of this interesting info, it looks like a number of Australian theatres may increase the number of female toilets. As someone who loves going to the theatre, and in fact, this isn't the theatre, but I am going to the ballet tonight, which you would absolutely froth on.
Oh, I'd love that. As you know, I was a professional.
Ballerina,
Anyone saw that on Instagram?
Twinkle toes. I think it needs to be done because, you know, when you're going to see a show and there's like, no offense, there's not that many guys there. And the female toilet queue is genuinely like around a staircase.
It's actually like anxiety inducing, you know, when they start to make that little do-do-do music and you're like, I've got to,
oh my God,
wait right
up.
Now. And I have to go. Otherwise, I'm going to piss myself in my seat.
Yes.
So
it's
can
so
we
frustrating.
Keep Isn't that wild that I've never thought that there were more toilets in the men's? I just thought it was because they were pissing standing up and getting out quicker.
Well, it's a case of both, I think. Anyway, a good news story, if you haven't already seen it, and I was very late to the whole Libra party, if I'm honest, but have you seen that What I Wish You'd Been Told At by Libra?
That is unbelievable. And as someone that has worked in video production, my mind was blown from that point of view too. Like the way that was brought together is beautiful.
It is. And I must admit, what I will say on this is if you are like me and you originally a few years back thought, oh gosh, that is confronting seeing like period blood on an ad. I was like, whoa. Now I actually have seen it so many times that I'm like, see, this is good marketing. Because I feel like it's normalized, which is the whole point of a campaign like this. This is exactly why
it's a brand's purpose should be for those sorts of reasons.
Yeah. Bloody nailing it. Anyway, it was excellent. Just wanted to put it out there. If you haven't seen it, you should check it out.
I've never thought about the sort of ads that Sienna would see on TV versus what you would have as a little girl. It would be totally different.
Oh, lots of sports bet. There's lots of betting ads, obviously.
I can't believe betting ads are still on, by the way. Yeah.
Disgraceful. But if she's seeing those type of ads, then we are going to have a bunch of women or girls that grow up that, unlike me, are never going to have that shock factor because it'll be the norm, which is excellent.
And hopefully won't hide things as much. Like, to be honest, we're probably always going to hide period blood to an extent, but at least maybe the conversation and the rhetoric around it will be a little bit more open. But hopefully our bladders will be more closed. I have two follow-ups from last episode. One of them actually is not a follow-up from last episode. It's just me asking you a question. But the first one is that breastfeeding segment that wasn't even a segment. It was just a quick conversation off the top of the episode. Went absolutely off. People came to us by the truckloads talking about their breastfeeding difficulties, their journeys, how seen they felt by Sarah Pound from Wholesome by Sarah. And I've actually been DMing Wholesome by Sarah, who you love. She said she got 800 DMs saying similar things. Yeah. 800 people wrote to her. So you can't even imagine how many extra people felt that way. It's such a common experience and it has totally inspired our poll today. Secondly, Lozzie, God, we've just had the week from hell with gastro. It was absolutely horrific.
That gives me anxiety. Even your messages, I was like, oh God, you poor soul.
It was actually so bad. Normally I try and be like, oh, you know, it was awful, but we'll move on. It was absolutely horrific. Ray woke up woke up. Can't even talk anymore. I'm so tired by the whole thing. Ray woke up in his own vomit two nights in a row screaming. He then, on his last bad night, I want to say, that day after his midday nap and then after falling to sleep that night, woke up screaming and panicking in a way we've never seen him. Apparently, it's a sign of dehydration.
Yeah.
And to the point where you're taking them to hospital. So we did take him to hospital that night. They eventually got him drinking fluids. He really wasn't drinking and he was diarrheaing all of that day, had stopped vomiting. But it was actually scary and it made me think so much, again, of this breastfeeding piece of people in the early days trying to feed their baby. So much emphasis is put on the weight gain. But what's also really stressful for that, if you're having really bad struggles and they're really not drinking, is the hydration thing. So it made me really think about mums going through that. Absolutely wild. But what it also did, I reckon, is create a little bit of a behavior shift in my little friend, right? He was so mean to Posey. Started kicking her over all the time, kicking her toys over, and he's being an absolute brat to her. I think he's coming good, and I think it was genuinely a frustration from being so sick and so like unwell and just annoyed at being in the house.
Yeah.
What do you do when Sienna's really mean to Zave? How do you speak to her through it?
Oh, good question. I mean, this isn't a hack, but a girlfriend of mine said to me to use these words, this terminology, to really drive home a point. So whether it's like bad behavior or maybe it's like traditions or perhaps it's even like expectations that you set in your household. And so I always say things like, in our family, we treat each other nicely, which means we don't hit. Or in our family, we don't hit each other. Instead, we use our words when we're frustrated.
Oh, and love it.
The only reason
this
I say that.
Gentle parenting and very like admirable. I love it.
Please, I scream half the other time. I don't know. Get on.
It's so hard not to yell at them when you see them physically hurting their sibling. It actually made me cry yesterday. Yeah. I was at my wit's end and I was like, she's literally, you've just kicked her to the ground. We've just been through a week of gastro. No one slept. Posey's not sleeping. That's another one we'll get to.
Yeah.
And I was just like, how do you not lose it at them?
Or I always kind of divert that aggression into something else. So I'll be like, Sienna, if you're feeling like that, stamp your feet. Go for it. Scream.
Oh, that's a really good
scream.
One. Like, let something
punch
out.
Your fists in the air.
Because that's what I think it was. Don't hurt, it was like Zave. An outlet. That's a really good one. Sometimes you can sort of laugh through it and be sort of kind through it, I reckon. And you're just a bit like, hey, don't do that. Other times it fucking gets to you. And yesterday it got to me. Another thing, I'm not sure if this is even a good way to go about it, but something else I did was just give sympathy to Posey in front of Ray while she was crying. I didn't know if maybe that would make him aware that he'd hurt her.
I
don't know
what. I also think we need to remember aggressive behavior is never okay. Okay. I'm just going to preface it by saying that, whether it's towards a sibling, another kid, or your family members, whoever. But kids are kids. Like they do. He's 2.5 and he's testing the boundaries and he's hungry because he probably hasn't eaten. And he's also bloody thirsty, let's be real.
And he's
pissed
off. His bottom's a little bit sore.
Yeah. He's peeved because, you know, he's not getting the love and attention and the happy feelings that he gives every day. And he's acting out. Like if he did it consistently, I'd be like, all right, well, got to take a couple more hard measures there. But
take
what else
to
do you do
school,
than say,
boarding daycare.
See ya. What else do you do? All you can say is like, that's not how we behave. Don't do that. That's not kind. How would you like it if someone did it to you?
Exactly. Okay. Great tips. Last one from me is after 8 days of no daycare for him, because we needed like the 48-hour clearance before we could send him from that last symptom. And I was genuinely like, I would never, ever put anyone through this. So I'm going to like err on the side of caution and go over that. But today he was so happy to go to daycare. So also maybe he was annoyed at the lack of routine. He was so excited to take his cars to Hildy and to his little mate, Juki. So that's the end of the updates. So anyway, so let's get to today. Lozzie, I'm struggling today. Can you tell us what we're talking about today?
Sure. Today, what Zoe Foster Blake taught me about how to say no and why it matters. This is a brilliant piece by upcoming Ready or Not guest Claire Stevens. And I think it's fair to say that every single mother could be better at saying no in some capacity. And are we really, like truly being honest about how we're feeling? What's too negative? What feels out of touch and ungrateful? What is relatable? Lozzie, which is me, but you wrote this. The question I can never seem to answer for myself, being Lou, is how much to share and how much to hold back. But recently, I, Lauren, shared a story about how I felt when Zabe wasn't sleeping that Lou had never heard. So she wanted to talk about it with me today and share a little bit of where mentally and maybe a little bit physically, but more emotionally, where you're at. And we also unpack one of our hottest polls today, which is all about sleep. Unsurprising.
Oh, sorry. All about breastfeeding. I don't know. Obviously. Let's keep this Lucy. In because it goes to show my state of mind.
All about sleep, which is what Lucy thinks about 24/7 at the moment. It's actually all about breastfeeding. I mean, both sleep and breastfeeding are very hot topics, let's be real. So I'm taking...
They're very linked in this household and they're very stressful.
I'm taking things away today. What Zoe Foster-Blake taught me about how to say no and why it matters. Claire Stevens, who I absolutely adore, and Lucy has a, I would say, somewhat obsession with.
I have a professional crush on both Stevens twins. I think they're very funny, very intelligent, and they have the careers that I genuinely thought I would have at their age. Not as funny, don't get me wrong, but the mix of what they do, I'm like...
They just seem like relatable, nice.
Yeah, and they're so everyday. Like they're intelligent, but they're so everyday. Don't care about fashion. I do care about fashion, but I love that they don't. They're just sort of like, whatever. We're just smart, funny girls here to have a good time.
Yeah, I'm all about it. So she wrote an excellent piece that really talks about why it can be so hard to say no. And it's actually a question that comes through a lot in our DMs and a topic I personally am so passionate about. Like I don't love saying no, but I love it when people come to me for advice because they've either said yes to too many things and I'm like, just say no.
Say no.
If you don't want to do it, if you're not like, yes, I really want to go, don't go.
Yeah.
Like life is too short to consistently say yes. There is so little time in the day. I know it's like Beyoncé's got 24 hours in the day.
Yeah, Bang. Same 24 hours as we all do.
It's limited.
She walks into an absolute hellhole in her kitchen every day too, I'm sure.
Do shit that you want to do. And I actually am going to do a whole tips and tricks episode on this because we have had so many DMs about it and I would love to share my feedback on it. Okay, but aside from that, it's a phrase that I am hearing more and more executives give advice on. So not just Zoe Foster-Blake, but Jane Fonda. There was somebody else. I mean, Jane Fonda's not an executive. She's fucking A-League.
She's the boss of the world.
Yes, but more and more people are saying, just say no. It is a complete sentence. No but ifs and, you know, all the little, yeah, don't do it. So in this article, Claire goes on to say, women in particular are tied to the expectation that the needs of others will come before our own, that our boundaries are porous and open, and to close them is callous and cold.
Oh, powerful.
I know, bloody great, Claire. Perhaps because historically we've been valued exclusively as caregivers and that role demands sacrifice, spot on. But caring for someone, in my case, a tiny person who is growing before my eyes in a way that is at once miraculous and terrifying, is an ever-present reminder that life slips through our fingers, that time is all we have. She goes on to say, there is a financial privilege in being able to say no to work, to particular jobs. But we're all mortal beings with a finite number of years and days and hours and some degree of choice about how we spend at that time. And I want to tie it into a workplace example that I think so many women fall into the trap of doing. And that is culture, creating culture, being that person that creates a team morale, that brings people together, that creates a vibe in the office that actually motivates people to perform and do better at their work. And I guarantee you that person is not compensated. If you are someone that falls in that bucket, which in my experience is predominantly women, and you're called upon to, you know, oh, it'd be great if we could do a team activity, or like, Lou, why don't you get involved in organizing a fun team day? Or if you could add some, you know, catering, if you could find catering for that, that'd be amazing. Say no.
I used to fucking always do this at my old job. I always did it. I did the birthday cakes. I did any sort of group activity. I organized the Christmas parties. And I did wear it like that sort of maternal gatekeeping badge of honor. Like everyone comes to me for these things and how good am I? Because I do it all. It's a fucking another job that you don't get paid for.
I have a real bee in my bonnet around it. And the reason is because on so many occasions, that culture element comes with an enormous amount of work. It's not just organizing a fun little get together. It's the logistics behind it. It's getting executives on board. It's creating comms to go to everyone in the organization. It's on the day making sure that your brand, being the organizer, shines through and that everyone's really happy and they're engaged and they're having the best time
actually
ever.
Bloody go. Yeah.
Yeah. And then
getting
you get
to the office early to make sure that there's enough napkins and paper plates and all of that shit.
All the things. And everyone's like, oh my God, that was so amazing. We had the best time. Thank you so much. And then it comes to your performance review and they're like, how have you gone above and beyond in your role? And you're like, oh, well, I've done all these extra activities to increase staff engagement, which in turn has provided extra revenue to the company because people are more motivated to work. They're more connected to their teams. They feel a real deep sense of belonging, which we know is attributed directly to the performance of a workplace. And then they go, oh, yeah, it's not really like tied back to your role. We don't have budget for that. But like kudos to you. Drop it. Say
Drop it.
No.
Do you have an example of something you've said no to? I'm actually about to say no to one myself. Do you have one
first? I say no all the time. Do you mean from a work context?
Yeah.
Here's a good example. In one of the workplaces that I was in, I got asked as a development opportunity if I wanted to work within a different team to help them on a project. Personally, for me, I was like, I don't really want to develop from a communications perspective. Communications isn't really an area that I've ever seen myself
I've actually peaked in that area. I've peaked.
Yeah.
I have nothing to learn.
I was like, I don't want to be writing briefs like for internal comms. Just not my jam. Like I get that it is definitely an area that I have no skills in and I could develop in. But when I look at my career over the next 15 years, I don't want to do that. It doesn't fascinate me. It doesn't excite me. So instead I just said, no, it's not an area that I want to develop in.
Yeah. Did you think that had any repercussions of seeming like a keen person that's open to opportunities? Like, do you think that unfairly put you down the ranks or not?
No. I think the way that I framed it at the time was probably along the lines of, I love the job that I'm in and I'm learning a lot every day. I also think I'm developing at a pace that will really benefit the team and the company in this role. So by taking on that, I feel like I'll lose focus on what I'm working on. And so it's just the way of framing it. But the answer was no.
No. And I love that you just said no. You just said no. Even when I asked you that, you said no. You've inspired me to do something that I was thinking of doing. But knowing me, sometimes I'll get an opportunity. I'll think, oh, I'm not going to say yes to that because it's too much. Then I'll think about it a little bit more. I'll think about the opportunities. I'll think about if that person will come to me again. It'll make me nervous if it means I'll miss out on further opportunities. And then I will inevitably end up saying yes. But I have a friend that wants to work on a sort of creative project, like a sort of, we don't know what the scope is yet, but basically he works in film ad agency land and he wants to make some sort of series about what we do in the sense of not specifically about you and I, but about the whole making work work concept. He just messaged me after talking about this for about 6 months saying, sorry, I've been so slow. Love to pick this conversation up. It immediately made my chest tight. As I told you this morning, I haven't been
timing
feeling good.
Isn't right.
Timing's not right. I'm going to say to him, I would love to do this when Posey starts at daycare next year. I don't have capacity now. I'm going to say no. So thank you very much for this.
Great. Perfect response. The end of the article is probably my favorite part of this whole piece. And I wanted to reiterate it because there's so many people. I cannot get over how many conversations I have weekly about friends that are complaining about their workload or how they're like, oh, fuck, I don't know how I ended up with this absolute shit show that I've now got to manage. Or people that are like, oh, I'm going to go see this person on Sunday, but I just cannot be bothered. Like, why are we doing this? It's 2024. Cut the dead wood.
When you mentioned that bit up the top that Claire said about that sort of along the lines of it being our one precious life, it made me question.
It is true.
Why we pander to everyone else's needs so much. Like, hang on, did we get this so wrong to evolve as humans and raise people to pander to everyone else instead of looking after ourselves?
Do you know what else I'm going to say? And this is slightly controversial. I am going to say, as you age and as your life goes on and it becomes more complex, and you have children and those children make friends at school, your friendships and your group, it changes.
Yeah.
And quite honestly, that is okay. You don't need to be rude to people and be like, sorry, I don't want to catch up with you. You're annoying. You drain my life. You're just not for me. But instead, you can just say, no, thanks. This week is hectic. Or no thanks, but have a great time.
Yeah.
There is nothing wrong with that. I think so many women like want to keep these connections. Oh, because you feel bad. Mate, let it go. Let it drift off into the sunset.
And like just touch 45 other way.
You know,
like if they're old school friends, for example, that you will always deeply care about, but you have less in common, maybe pick up the phone instead. We do not need to challenge ourselves to do everything. I've done that so many times. Gotten in the car to go to something in Melbourne that has absolutely drained me, ruined my whole week. I've enjoyed seeing whoever it is. Don't get me wrong. But there has been so much other cost. It's like, what are we doing this for?
Yeah, absolutely. So she ended the article with two quotes. One by gender equity expert Eve Rodsky, author of Fair Play, who says, in a patriarchal society, women's time is viewed as infinite like sand, and men's time is viewed as finite like diamonds. Oh. So true. And another quote by Zoe Foster Blake herself, I mean, ultimate girl crush for me. When you say no to them, you're saying yes to you.
That is such a beautiful way to end. Obviously, Zoe is very much in the zeitgeist at the moment, just releasing her book. And I've seen so many social reels with really great bits and bobs from interviews she's had. One thing that I really loved listening to her talk about is that she's done this all at a great cost, because people always say to her, how do you do it all? How do you do it all? And she says, at great cost. And I know that cost isn't coming from her kids, because she spends so much time with her kids and she loves her kids. Obviously, it's the outside things. She can't always see her friends. She can't always do everything. You have to pick a few things, and other things fall to the wayside.
Yeah. And such is life, my friend. You grow, you change, your job changes, your children change. It's like a constant evolution of you. Like, and that may mean saying no to things that you previously would have said yes to and just being completely tapped out and honestly looking at it and being like, that's not going to fill my cup this week. I'm going to say no. Next week it may change.
Maybe, Loz, I've got a dare for us. I'm not sure if you're going to say yes to this or not. Firstly, I just want to tell you that my first word was no, and Mum was really proud of that. And I feel like it comes back to the fact that I was a little girl saying no, and she was like, you're so cute, your first word was no.
I think mine was more.
More. I love that. I love that. That should have been my first word, given the way I'm eating at the moment. But I've got a dare. Would you get a tiny tattoo of the word no somewhere hidden on a body part?
Are you insane? You know the tattoo that I want to get, and I still haven't done it.
It's a wave, isn't it? On your bum?
Yeah, on my dominant butt cheek, which at the moment would be my left, you know.
So you're not going to get a no tattoo with me? Or are you going to say no to it?
Where would I get that? Where would I even get that?
Think, where would, can someone DM us where we should get a little no tattoo? Because I'm game. Loz.
Absolutely not. It's a hard one.
Loz is saying no to the no.
No.
So all jokes aside, Lozzie, I have been feeling flat. Not all the time, not even often, but often enough for me to question, like, if I am actually okay. Posey just won't sleep through. We cannot figure a way to settle her outside of giving her the boob. Hayden has tried shushing, rocking, patting, cuddling, all sorts of things. He's even toyed with the idea of getting her in the car. We haven't gotten that far yet. We've tried pain relief. We've tried antihistamines. We think it's teething. We think it's this. We've tried bottles, all sorts of things. And she just won't settle for anything other than my boob. And I don't know why, when I break it down for you now, and it's funny, even now from speaking to you for the last half hour or however long it's been, I already feel better than I did 2 hours ago. But 2 hours ago, I was nearly in tears. I just felt glazed over and stressed. Last night, for example, she went to bed at normal time, woke up at about 8:45 and just screaming and inconsolable for an hour and a half.
Yeah.
We tried everything, could not do anything for her. And for the first time, her scream is giving me like anxiety. So now when I put her in the high chair to feed, for example, for lunch, she screams and it gives me, like, it makes me all choky and stressed. And it's like someone's sitting on my chest. And it's not an experience I had with Ray. He wasn't the best sleeper. I'm sure there's bits I'm forgetting, but it definitely wasn't as hard as this. And my mental health didn't take as much as a dive. It's got a lot about really mundane motherhood experiences like yours and mine, where nothing too wild has happened. It's not to say it's easy, but on paper, pretty seamless experience. It's got me thinking about how many of us suffer in silence with these experiences, because sometimes even I can get annoyed at people that complain too much when they have really great and privileged lives, but have just lost a bit of sleep. I have been that person thinking to myself, your kids are well, none of you are in hospital sick, just come on, get on with it. Like I've had those moments. And then you're in it and you go, actually, that's not fair at all. And I don't mean that I actually tell people to get on with it, but there is that narrative out there of just push on, don't be negative. Even telling a few friends who checked in on me this morning after the gastro thing, asking me how I was feeling. For the first time, I was like, I'm actually feeling flat. I'm feeling really teary. I'm feeling really emotional. I'm struggling a bit. It was so hard for me to say it. And I still just felt negative for doing it. I'm like, how can you even complain? You're so lucky. We've got both sets of parents. We have childcare. I have a partner that helps. And even with all that aside, it's still hard. And I think for me, the sleep deprivation is really making me a bit mad. I'm walking around feeling a little bit dizzy, tired, glazed over, and just so far from myself. And when I told you about this the other week, when it started to go from just like a frustration to like a, oh, I'm just not quite right at the moment.
Yeah.
You told me about how you felt at the height of Zave's sleep being anything but gorgeous. We'll put it that way, to put it mildly. And I had never heard you speak about this to me because unless you're going through something at the exact same time as someone, you often don't. And at that time, we didn't have the podcast. So it's not like we were speaking every 5 seconds. Can you please tell everyone about how you felt at that time and what was happening?
Number one, I felt hungover, like really seedy all the time. I felt like whatever I ate, whatever I drank, I just couldn't shake this like grogginess. Like my head felt not clear. I felt really emotional and I felt this like deep level of, I don't know if it's like a helplessness or hopelessness, like kind of a combination of both. And it's very difficult to articulate because that screaming, for example, it just set me off. I was like, I don't know what else to do with this kid. Like, I'm so tired. People would come over and they'd be like, how's it going? I'd be like, oh, I just, you know, sleep's really shit. And they're like, oh, you know, like, and I was like, no, like, I actually am not coping. Like, I remember just saying to Ryan, maybe like 2 weeks before I went to the GP, but I was just cried. I was like, I can't do this. Like, I just don't think I can do it. I'm not set out for this. Like, I can't do it. I'm not getting sleep. And he was like, oh, it's going to be okay. I'm like, it's not going to be okay. Like, I'm so fucking tired. Like, he won't stop screaming. Every time I felt like he would like be quiet a bit and I'd put him down, he would scream again. I was like, this is just unsustainable.
That's what Posey does. It's the worst. And you're so nervous to put them back down.
Yeah, but you can't, then you're like, you can't sleep standing up. Like the whole thing is so frustrating. And then in the back of my mind, I'm like, don't be too loud, like you're going to wake Sienna. And then I just remember also one night being like, I can't fucking do this. Like I literally was like, fuck this. I'm out. Like I can't do it. And I just like stormed into our bedroom. And like Ryan was great. Like he was obviously trying to help on a number of different occasions. But I was like, I can't do it anymore. I can't. I like, give for the fucking kid back. Give him back.
Yeah.
You figure it out. I don't care. It was like 3 a.m. in the morning. I'm like, Ryan's like, oh, maybe I'll take him for a walk around the block. I'm like, I don't care what you do.
Yeah.
Get that
like,
noise.
I'm just dejected.
That noise, get it away from me. I cannot handle the noise any fucking longer. I need silence. Like I can't. And that's just where I got to.
It's so messed up. Wow. That is so validating because so many of those things that you just said are what has been inside of my head. I remember when I was away in Queensland with mum and dad, that was when it was at its worst and Posey was waking up like hourly while we were away and Hayes was away separately. And the reason I let him go on this trip was because I went away with mum and dad, but still, even with their help, it was still on me and I wasn't getting them up in the middle of the night when they were getting up with Ray in the morning and all of that stuff and didn't want to ruin their sleep, didn't want to ruin their time. And I was so low that it's those moments where you remember why they tell you not to shake the baby. And we all laugh about that in quiet corners. And
no, but it's serious, Because you're like,
you feel
fuck
a little bit dangerous.
Yeah.
You do. I would never, like, my kids are the absolute loves of my life and I would never do anything to hurt them. But when you are, and I am feeling emotional now, when you're like that, it's like you just don't know what to do. It's helplessness. That is actually so perfectly put. It's helplessness. Mm. No one can help you. You want this baby to stop screaming, not just for you, but for them too. It's the middle of the night, so everything feels more lonely, even though there are literally thousands of parents doing this exact same thing, like within freaking 15 kilometers of you probably.
Yeah.
It is the loneliest feeling.
I think this is what actually does make it harder though. And I can't speak from experience because I didn't have that with my first child. I only had it with my second. But I also think there is an unspoken weight of if you're away with someone, for example, your parents, not to disturb them, or if you have a sibling, not to wake them up, or perhaps like your husband.
The not waking
really
Ray up thing has actually really stressed me more than I ever could have anticipated. It crushes my chest as well. I'm like, he's a second away from waking up and I'm going to lose it.
Yep. And I don't feel like anyone talks about it. And then like also like, for example, like at the time, Ryan was really stressed with his job and I was like, I'm trying not to wake him up. I'm trying not to fucking wake up Sienna, because if we wake up Sienna, we're going to have to read her like four fucking books. It's going to take an hour for her to get back
to sleep. Yeah, like kids don't just go back to
sleep. It's going to prolong my sleep. Yeah, like everything. And all I could think about is I am trying so fucking hard to make everybody else not hear this noise, and this fucking kid just won't shut up. Like, why? It's awful. But I'll tell you what I did. Number one, the final straw was I remember saying to Ryan, like, I was so upset one day. He'd gone to like, he had like a work function because Zave was born at the end of November. So the 28th of November, I got out of hospital like the week after or whatever. Then it was my birthday. And then obviously, you know, Christmas season begins, right? Yeah. And if you have a husband that works in construction, it begins. It is a thousand.
Did you put rules around that just quietly? Like just quickly, were there things that you could and couldn't go to, or did you just let him go to anything?
I was like, this will be fine, mate. I'm all over it. Don't worry. Like, the kid's cute. It'll be great.
Yeah.
But I remember one night, it was so horrible. Like the whole bedtime, bath time thing was just cooked. Sienna was frustrated. Zay just would not stop screaming. It was like 7 o'clock. I was like exhausted. And he was like only 3 weeks old, 2 weeks old at this time. And I remember saying to Ryan, get the fuck home or I will leave you. And the final straw for sleep school, the final straw was after months of this, I remember just crying and being like, I can't do this. Like, I was like, I think I prefer just to be on my own. Like, I want to be by myself. And he was like, you need help.
When you say by yourself, do you mean totally solo, don't you? As in not like leaving, you just meant totally on your own.
Yeah. I was like, I just don't want to be like, I don't want to be in this house. I don't want to be like near my kids.
I just need to be
honestly by myself. Yeah. In solidarity with my mind.
Yeah, because we're about to talk about breastfeeding challenges from the other point of view. I've been really lucky that I've never had breastfeeding challenges, but what I do have is sometimes, like, it's getting to nighttime and I'm like nearly in tears actually about feeding her, because I'm like so stressed about, I'm the only one that could settle her. And I'm like, oh God, here we go again. Like,
it's exhausting.
So I heard this from someone else, I'd probably have sympathy. But maybe not to the extent that I should, because when you're actually in it, you're just like, oh, it's such a weight. And so then some feeds are becoming not enjoyable because I'm like, I'm the only fucking way of settling you. Mm. And like, I need you to get off me. And I've been having those with Ray. I was really good at sort of getting mini breaks in and going away. And I'm pretty good at doing that guilt-free for a few nights. If I went for 7 days, we'll see how my guilt plays out. But for now, two or three nights here and there, great. Didn't really bother me. Missed him a tiny bit. We'll just get home a happier mum. This time around, because she's still mostly bottle refusing, we had some weird luck the other night, but then she refused it last night. So riddle me that one. But because she's mostly bottle refusing and only really still exploring solids, I'm feeling so much of that pressure of like, I can't really leave you for long periods of time, but it's feeling more like a necessity than a nice to have now. Whereas with Ray, it sort of felt like a nice to have, like, oh, that would be great to go away with girlfriends for two nights. Whereas now I'm like, I need a fucking break, and a proper one is not coming, but you know what is coming? And I'm so lucky that we are partnering with Home, which is Home spelled with a B, like womb, but Home, a postpartum hotel in Melbourne. I'm going to stay there for 4 nights, and it's basically a place where mothers are mothered. It's not a sleep school. They're not going to fix posy sleep. They will support it, and they have experts there to help with all different areas. But they do your cooking, they do your cleaning, they do your laundry. And I'm so lucky, and it's ridiculous because I feel so guilty, because I think there are so many mums out there navigating medical complexities, or they've got postnatal depression themselves, or they couldn't afford this sort of thing that I've been lucky to get through a partnership. And I feel so guilty that I'm the one doing it, but I am going to report back and I will share what it's like to stay there and what I learned from my guests really leaning into that help, because I did have a really supported postpartum. So it's not about that. And a few friends have said to me, oh, you know, you have done a lot of work, so go easy on yourself there. And that just makes me feel guilty. I know it's well-intended, but I'm like, you just make me feel guilty. Like, I drop the ball in other areas. Like, other friends are really good at cooking and cleaning and laundry, but I've dropped the ball in other areas like that at different phases. So there is something that I'm always dropping and Hayden picks up bits and pieces. But I think it's just the sleep deprivation, really.
100%. I don't think it matters what you're doing. Like when I had Zayn, I was doing nothing. I was on mat leave. Yeah. I wasn't working, just chilling, enjoying my best life. I was
so tired.
And
I love what we do. Like it actually soul enriches me, not soul destroys me.
It's not about that though. Like,
yeah.
As
Thank
humans,
you for saying that,
and as
because
mothers,
I feel really guilty about working.
No, you need sleep.
Yeah.
And I also think there's all these misconceptions around seeking help in that area. So like whether it's you go to a sleep school or whether you go to like a postpartum care facility, like a sanctuary for mothers, I don't understand why there's this negative like, oh no, you know, your baby will be traumatized for life or I can't believe she's doing that. You know, it's very like self-indulgent. Mate.
Yeah, the self-indulgent piece is huge.
I can't. At the end of the day, kids are happy when they have a happy mum. If you're struggling, if you're not yourself, if you're feeling out of whack and you have the means to support you doing that, go for it. A lot of the other thing I would say is I did go to Masada and there was so much negativity around it before I went and I really wish I had spoken to more people and I guarantee you, off the back of my experience, so many people reached out to me and they're like, oh, Loz, I heard you had a good experience. Like, what's it all about, rah, rah? I'm like, dude, it's all about the mum. I was at the point of desperation. I needed to sleep. I enlisted the help of professionals to help me. I got what I needed. And then I came back with a happy sleeping baby. And I was a happy, vibrant mum.
And a happy sleeping mum.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not going to be sitting here dissing something. Like, do what works for you. I think the one thing I would have loved to have had a place like home when I was looking at options, and I know that they're also looking into a private health fund rebate, I believe. I think that's on their website at the moment.
Amazing.
Which would be a fucking miracle worker for mums. But I will say, like, Masada's a hospital, mate. There's a lot of different people that go in there for mental health reasons, for psychiatric reasons, for sleep reasons, sleep studies like myself. It is not this glamorized, like, oh, I'm checking into, like, you know, Epworth Private and getting my panna cotta every day. The food is horrid. The facilities are old. Like I would have loved a place where I went in and I actually felt nurtured.
Held.
Oh, and had like a nice pillow and thought, you know what? This is an experience where I'm going to put my head in the pillow at the end of the night. I feel like so nourished, loved, supported. Like I'm not saying you don't feel like that at sleep school because you do because you're so fucking tired. Yeah. You meet other women there. But am I saying it's luxe? Absolutely not. You go for desperation, not because you feel like it. It's not.
Yeah.
We need to get rid of that hype. It's just outrageous.
You've made me feel so much better, not only because of the experience that you've had, which I don't wish that you had, but thank you for sharing that. But also just with the guilt and the, I guess, bouginess around going and actually leaning into the help. So for anyone out there who is struggling a little bit like me, which is really hard to admit. I can't believe how hard that is to admit. It still hits my ego a bit to be like, am I feeling a bit depressed? I don't know. We will see. But I will share my learnings of what it's like to, I guess, learn from these people and be held by them. And we'll keep chatting about this. And if anyone wants to slide on into our DMs, please do with your stories. Next poll also will actually be on sleep because I want to look more into sleep deprivation and its actual effect on mental health. Because what I do find really interesting, Lozzie, is that we all know that sleep affects our mental health. And we talk about that societally, but I don't think we really specifically talk about that with mothers and how much that affects them because the impact is huge.
It is huge. And I'm glad the narrative around sleep is being discussed more. It is very difficult to comprehend when you're not in it. Even now, it's like I can have forgotten how horrific it was. But at the time, it was all I could think about.
Yeah, it's your whole world.
Oh, it's your whole world. And when people ask me questions like, oh, you know, newborns, I just, you know, I'm like, mate, like I'll never forget, never. I have a Cubo. So I still use it. I love it.
What's a Cubo?
To Zave in the morning. You know, the little monitor, the birdie.
Cute. Yeah, so cute.
But I remember it used to tell me how many wakes. I've still got the graph of it. I still keep it just to remind myself.
Oh, yeah, he woke all the time.
On one night, I shit you not, it said something like 24 wakes. Like when people were like, oh, just you know what it's like. You can't sleep training until the 12 months. You just got to roll with it. I'm like, babe, I'm not just fucking rolling with it. He's up 20. Last night, I went to his room. So the green is like where I enter, where my hand touches a cot. 14 times. Oh. Number of wake-ups between midnight and 5 a.m., 22. I kept it to genuinely remind myself and be like,
you weren't crazy at that time, darling. That was hard.
You need help. This is not normal and it is not okay.
Posey doesn't wake as much. So then it's sometimes I'm like, what am I complaining about with just a few wakes a night?
Relative. It is all relative. Mm. And you know the other thing I will say? Every person is built differently. Like in terms of like stress thresholds, sleep thresholds, temperament of baby. Don't ever let someone invalidate how you feel or what your experience is because it's relative to you. Like I must have 6 hours of sleep. Any less, I don't feel like myself. I don't need 10. I don't need 8. I need 6. Like for someone else that could be like, you know what? If I have 2 blocks of 2 hours, I'm good. You do you. But stop being so judgy on everyone else. Like everyone's running their own race.
Always been someone that goes pretty well with not much sleep. But I think it's the compounding of Ray wasn't the best sleeper. He wasn't the worst, but it's not like he slept through from 3 months or anything wild like that. It probably took him till about 1 to sleep through. And he was very much a boob boy as well. And I just think sometimes like I'm so hard on myself when you think about it. And so many mums are in this boat where you're pregnant or breastfeeding for 3 years in a row when you have 2 under 2, if you do feed for about a year. And if you have 2 under 2, I've been pregnant or feeding for fucking 3 years. So I'm going to go easy on myself. And hopefully this encourages someone else to do the same.
Absolutely.
And yeah, if this resonates with you, please let us know. And we will do that sleep poll next because, wow, it is changing my life, my lack of sleep. Let's make a joke about it to go into the poll. All right, Lozzie, all things breastfeeding challenges. You and I have had pretty opposite experiences, but even within that, you have had pretty opposite experiences. Mm. So let's hit it. Let's hit the poll all about breastfeeding. There's a lot of questions here. I'm going to do the multi-choice here today. And at the link in our show notes, I'm going to share the over 20 incredible stories that you were all generous enough to share with us. Unfortunately, we just don't have enough time to put it all in an episode.
Lucy would love to, though.
I would love to. But Loz, you know, she edits me down. So we'll go through the actual poll multi-choice here, and then we'll link in the show notes something that will make any parent out there that has had challenges feel so much better because, wow, these generous responses were fucking beautiful, challenging, and heartbreaking. Let's take it away. First question was, how much did you prepare for breastfeeding? So we'll just get you to guess because there are so many questions, Lozzie. Options were not at all, a little bit, or a lot?
A little bit, B, 70%.
Yep, 46 only. So 46% a little bit, not at all 38%, and a lot 15%. Probably no surprises there for me. What do you think?
I reckon the a lot would be second timers that had a shocking first time experience, to be honest, because I was anal on the second time. I did so much shit. I downloaded all these guides. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Isn't that amazing? It's so different second time. What was your mindset going into breastfeeding? I actually do want to know your answer to this. So the options, really wanted it to work out, thought I'd give it my best with no expectation, didn't love the idea of breastfeeding, thought formula would be for me. What was your feelings going into it?
I thought it would be natural and easy and just I did not even think for 1 second. I wasn't even familiar with formula brands. I was like, you just put them on your tit and away you go.
I love that that's your answer, actually, because a friend DM'd me saying another option is that I just thought it came naturally. Like it wasn't even that she really wanted it to work out. Nah. She just thought it would work out.
Yep.
Like it just
didn't
happens.
Even think about it. Yeah.
So what do you think was most common then?
Maybe A.
Yeah. I thought it was actually going to be thought I'd give it my best with no expectation, but it was really wanted it to work out. So that was 64%. Thought I'd give it my best was 33%. I think I'm one of those people that pretended she was in that camp, but if I was being honest with myself, was probably more the really wanted it to work out. And then C was 2%, which was didn't love the idea of breastfeeding, and no one said thought formula would be for me, which might lend to your point of it's just not on people's radar yet because they haven't even thought about it. Next up, and how did breastfeeding go the first time around? A, pretty smoothly. B, slight challenges, but nothing major. C, very challenging, but we made it work. Or D, very challenging, didn't work out.
Maybe B,
well done, just. So slight challenges, nothing major, is 30% on the knocker. Very challenging, but we made it work is 28%. Pretty smoothly, 26%. Very challenging, didn't work out, was 16%. Pretty even spread there. Like nothing is winning by a majority. Everyone is being seen there. If you had breastfeeding challenges, did you persist more than you thought you would and more than, with the beauty of hindsight, you think was good for you? You'd say yes with your experience. With
absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. So what do you think the poll has said?
The same. Yes.
Yeah. So 100%, aka yes, was 54%. A little bit was 28% and no was only 18%. If you had a challenging first breastfeeding experience and you were expecting your second child, what did you decide to do second time around? Prep more for breastfeeding, which is obviously what you did.
Yeah.
Plan to mix feed, bottle feed from day one, or hope for a different experience? What do you think was the most common?
Oh, it's so hard. I think a lot of people maybe plan for a different experience, hope for a different experience, or plan to bottle mix feed. I'm not sure.
So actually more for breastfeeding, 47%.
Ah, okay.
And then hope for a different experience was 26%.
Mm-hmm.
Plan to mix feed was 23%. And bottle feed from day one was 3%. Isn't that incredible that even if someone's had a very challenging experience, only 3% of us are giving ourselves enough grace to say, I'm going to bottle feed from day one. It didn't work out for me.
Yeah.
It's amazing. If you eventually decided that breastfeeding wasn't working and you'd either mix feed with formula or exclusively formula feed, what was the final straw or push? It should really say who now that I'm looking at it, but here are the answers. Friend or partner or family member is the first one. Health professional is the second one, or I realized it on my own.
Oh, I would say A.
I'm so surprised here because I always hear people say that it took someone else saying something. But actually, I realized it on my own was 56%, and then the other two were 22% each. Next up, if you planned to breastfeed the second time around after a challenging first time, were you actually easier on yourself and more focused on your well-being the second time around? Options are no, was just as hard on myself, I was easier on myself, or wasn't too hard on myself the first time. What do you think won out?
I think easier on yourself.
Yeah, so that did win out. I actually thought it was going to be just as hard on myself. I haven't been through it, so that was just me sort of, I guess, guessing. But easier on myself was 51%, which is great to see. 38% just as hard on myself. So a lot of people still did feel that pressure, and that pressure is mounting always.
Yeah.
And then wasn't too hard on myself the first time around. Good on you was 11%. Lastly, and I will read out answers for this one because I think it is an important takeaway for anyone listening that is going through this. What would you do with hindsight? I said this could be anything from practical tips to what you tell yourself or how you'd advocate for yourself with health professionals. This is what people said. The second time around, I advocated for myself. I didn't get induced on a Friday because I knew there was no lactation support on the weekend. I booked help before and after the baby was born. I had a feeding plan and I asked to see a lactation consultant in hospital. I really think it should be a given. You should get it in hospital anyway. I planned to take formula to the hospital, but did antenatal expressing and had enough. I chose one person to listen to instead of listening to a whole lot of people. I think that's really good advice.
Love that.
With my first baby, I felt like opting out of breastfeeding wasn't an option, and it felt overwhelmingly stressful for about 3 to 4 months. In hindsight, I would have prioritized my mental health and switched to formula a few weeks in. Hindsight feels so easy, but when you're in the depths of newborn life, I struggled to form a thought, let alone remind myself to be kind to myself. I wish I'd written down exactly how I'd felt during my second pregnancy, all of those promises I made to myself, set some parameters. If we get to you crying in the middle of the night because your baby is screaming at your boob, refusing to latch, but will gladly take a bottle, maybe just give the baby to your partner, make her a bottle, and you can go back to sleep.
Yeah.
Great advice there. And this person actually goes on to say that she wished she sat down with her partner during pregnancy to nut all this out and gave him a list for when she was struggling to check back in with her. I think that's such a beautiful tip. Two more here. Breastfeeding is a beautiful curse. I think that's really good advice to round it out. So a lot of people then in the actual answers in the polls where they didn't DM me, they just respond to the actual question. Just said a million different iterations of I wish I looked after myself more and saw that my mental health ultimately mattered for my baby's health. Such an important lesson. So hard to learn at the time, unfortunately. Why is this the case?
I want to say because there is this innate dialogue that it's natural that you can do it. The same as birth, if I'm honest. Yep. It was like, it doesn't matter how you birth. Like, I don't give a shit. I don't care if you use drugs, get a C-section, whatever you want to do. And I actually don't really care if you elect to do it. I think fucking your body, you do whatever you want. Everyone wants the same result. Everyone wants a baby that's fed and a baby that's healthy and born, right? But there is this dialogue for women that like your body was like made to do this. And even
do you think
though
it's almost a marker of a good mum, like we think of that as a natural mum, not even a good mum, a natural mum, like you're a natural at this.
No, I just think it's a marker of women. Like it's just something that we all assume usually for your
women
first kid
can do.
Yeah. That you can do. And
it's interesting that you put it that way because Casey Edwards, the writer, said that she felt like she failed every hurdle of womanhood because she couldn't fall pregnant. And then she had a traumatic birth once she did eventually fall pregnant with IVF. And then she couldn't feed. And then her baby wasn't gaining weight. And she felt like she failed every basic identifiable achievement as a woman. So it's so true.
Yeah, it's such a mental thing too. Like you see all this imagery and there's such better narrative around it. And I don't want to discredit all the great work of like fed is best because of course I believe that. Of course I do. Like absolutely. I'm like the biggest yes person for that. But as Sarah Pound says, on every formula tin, breastfeeding is always
best. Only just noticed that 2 nights ago. I have a bottle that Posey basically won't touch a formula. And I noticed that 2 nights ago on the miracle bottle that she did have half of.
Yep. And every midwife is trained to say breast is obviously best if you can, you know?
Yeah.
And it's that whole thing that gets stuck in your head. Like it's something that's supposed to come so naturally. My body was made to do this. Why isn't it fucking working? Like, how can I just get better at it? Like everyone else can do it. And like, I also want to say, I had such a difficult time breastfeeding Sienna. It was so fucking torturous and so horrific and so bad. And I did turn, everyone's like, oh, you just got to get to 8 weeks. And then, you know, something clicks. And eventually it happened, right? But by that stage, I was so like fucking tapped out of it.
Yeah.
And I really pushed myself to continue.
You were traumatized.
Like, oh, it was horrible. So with Zave, like I went to, a couple of things were different for me. I downloaded a bunch of different like ways of breastfeeding, like different, you know, tech, like this is the latch technique of whoever. People gave me books. I read stuff. I instantly knew about lactation consultant in hospital. When I was going in to be induced, I asked for a lactation consultant the next day. I wanted to see someone immediately. I'm like, I want to book it in now. I want someone in my room before 9 a.m. tomorrow. Like, I don't want to fuck this up. Like, I just want to get on top of it quick. I bought Silverettes, which changed my life.
Oh, someone actually mentioned that in my DMs. I've got the worst memory.
Soreness. They are so good. And it surprised me too, because I'm like, how could this possibly work? Unbelievable. It's like, that blew my mind.
You just sounded like your dad when you said unbelievable.
I know.
What's exactly what Jerry says?
And then I was like, I am not fucking getting shamed like I did the first time with Sienna on night two when I was so emotional and I had to sign a waiver to give her formula. That's the standard.
Do you really?
Absolutely. That's a standard hospital procedure. You must sign a waiver.
I remember my friend had a cesarean. She could hardly move. She was in hospital. Her partner wasn't there because she was public. And she asked someone to bring a bottle of formula because she was struggling just with her baby crying. And she's like, I think she needs more. I think she's hungrier than what I can give her yet. And they basically were saying no to her. So she was crying.
It is.
That makes me
so
emotional right
now. For new mums, like so traumatic. And I remember signing it and them saying, you know, we do advise that, you know, to continue breastfeeding. But, you know, and I said, oh, it's like, is Sienna going to die from having this bottle? They're like, no. It's just like protocol. I was like, I won't fucking sign this. Like, it's bullshit. So with Dave, I'm like, I'm taking my own sterilized bottles, taking my own fucking tin of formula.
Oh,
and I'm not
you.
Going through that signing documentation bullshit.
Yeah, for my child.
If I please. And I
that
also advocated for myself.
Was. I didn't know that. Good on
you. Oh, God, yeah. And then obviously
you
I had no
just-
problem.
Actually just remind me, sorry, there's one question I missed that I actually have to read a few answers out to, and then we're going to wrap up because we are going over today. Hopefully people are liking this episode because it's a long one. This question was if you eventually made the move to either mixed feed or exclusively formula feed, describe your emotions in the aftermath of changing your feeding routine. There was such a mixed bag here, and that's why I think it's important to bring up. Most people said there was relief mixed with sadness. People said they felt like an absolute failure that they couldn't feed their daughter. Someone mentioned that the Fed is best thing is good, but it's still sort of dulled down their feelings of like sadness that they didn't get to breastfeed. And like they really went through a mourning process with that, which I thought was really interesting.
And I also think a lot of the people that, this is so mean, but a lot of people that say Fed is best are usually breastfeeding mums. And you're like, yeah. Well, fuck you.
Like, yeah. Like that's easy for you to say. Totally. It would be like me empathizing with someone that really wants to breastfeed. Like I can only do it to an extent.
Don't worry, Fed is best. I'm like, well, then you feed my baby because I can't get it on.
Exactly. And I think this person really articulates what so many people feel. There's a lot of relief and a lot of really great emotions. Some people are like, I cannot believe I didn't do it sooner. A really important response was, I can't believe I didn't realize that I could still breastfeed and mix feed and formula feed. Like we think it's so black and white, like you give them that formula bottle. Whereas often, like, look, let's be real, breast refusal does sometimes happen after bottle feeding. But that's not always the case. So you might find a really good rhythm of both if that's your journey. And then this last person broke my heart, but I think it articulates the emotions that come with it. For the people that didn't just feel relief and like it set them free, this person says, when I finally leaned in and accepted it, on one hand, it was, wow, how amazing is sharing this mental load with my partner? And look at our baby thriving like she should have been all along. On the other hand, oh, you failed breastfeeding again. And that just breaks my heart. And so if that's, you are not alone, you're not a failure. Breastfeeding is fucking tough and it does not always come easy.
And I'm going to finish this segment on this quote that someone sent me when I was really, really struggling with Sienna. And it was someone I actually didn't know at the time. I was upset to a girlfriend talking about it. And then she's like, oh, one of my girlfriends couldn't breastfeed. And, you know, she's like, oh, you know, she had a great experience. Blah, blah. Anyway, this person reached out to me and she said, hey, Loz, I've heard about your experience. I just want to let you know something that really helped me. Never once has a Nobel Prize winner ever got on stage and said, thanks, mum, for breastfeeding me. So don't worry, your child is going to be just fine. And I was like,
I've got two more to add to that for the good feels.
I loved it.
Someone else. I've just realized how like erratic my mind is. Like there's going to be other DMs that I've missed and I'm so sorry to our listeners, but I'm just so tired. This was the best I could do at the moment. But you've just reminded me that someone said they were just looking down at their three-year-old and that you would never know that they had these breastfeeding challenges looking down at them. They have this
exactly.
great relationship. They're thriving, they're happy, and they're bonded. Like they are bonded like all parents are with their children regardless. And then last one, just to end on a laugh, because maybe this is my toxic trait, on a laugh, is that meme about the lady who breastfed her son who now has face tattoos and she says, so go ahead and give them the bottle. And that is it. Thank you for coming on this journey, everyone. And please DM us if you have any thoughts about any of it all. I can't even talk, Lozzy, sign us off.
If you have loved today's episode, please leave us a positive review. Follow us on readyornot.pod. Send this episode to your gal pals, guy pals, whoever might need to hear it, and chat to you next week.